Bass Marlow, come on in. Even in a natural disaster, my door is always open to help. Want a blast? Still have some of that bourbon.
Thanks, Sid, but no, I think I want to be as sober as a priest on Sunday today.
Okay. Another time, maybe. Have a seat. So, what's on your mind?
Is that a joke?
It's a little one. Just something to set the mood. I'll open another way. What was the deciding factor that brought you in today? Other than Hurricane Bertha out there.
If you and the others are right, all of that out there is due to me. To the guilt I'm carrying. I can't have anybody getting hurt because of me. So whatever it is I need to do, I'll do it.
That's very noble. Honorable. You see a situation where you can help and you do something. Except, I suppose, unless the person who needs help is you.
What are you talking about?
Well, as a marshal, you're trained to be the good guy. What you and I'd call the guy in the white duds back in the old Western movies. You save kittens from trees, help old ladies cross the street, keep your checkbook balanced, and untie damsels from railroad tracks. You're the hero, Bass. You're used to helping people in need. All except that one person you see every day in the mirror, and probably the guy who needs it the most.
That's a little dramatic, isn't it, Sidney? You're kind of laying it on pretty thick, man.
As a therapist, we're trying to help the patient guide themselves to make internal revelations, to come to the answers they're seeking. Sometimes it's easy. Other times, people need a little nudge to get them there. Upon occasion, some people are in enclosed metal and Kevlar reinforced thermal mesh canister at the bottom of the planet, about to be obliterated by 90-mile-per-hour winds. Those things are known to happen. So, occasionally, we try to speed things up, just a smidge. Any recent internal revelations you want to share?
I've seen enough in my time down here to know this place doesn't exactly work like the rest of the planet. So, I'm willing to entertain that my guilt may be causing it.
Bass, I'm a horrible dancer. If you're gonna keep shuffling around, you'll step on my toes. So far, you've said you're sitting here with me because you must help people. That the environment and circumstances are plausible enough to believe you might be the cause. Duty, honor, loyalty, logic. Bass, some things I can't help you with. I can't help you with the biggies. You have to get to those yourself. If not, could you help me pack up my journals for the shelter and we'll just hold up there?
What is it that I want? What I need? Sidney, I want to deal with this guilt.
Finally! Okay.
I thought we might be here another few hours.
Bass, you've made your whole life, your whole mission about helping others who need it. And that is absolutely a very noble thing. But every so often, it's okay to be selfish. To want to make sure you are okay. Doctors in my field, we have a saying. In Latin, it goes, Medice cura te ipsum.
Luke 4:23, physician, heal thyself.
Huh, good. I'm more of a Torah man, personally, but you know, for somebody who describes himself as an atheist and a disbeliever, you do know your religious texts. No, but what I meant by finally was we can finally begin. Using my gift, I'm hearing several names. Some are quite loud. Those typically mean the guilt is recent. Those quieter names means the guilt has been there for... Oh. All right. Well, let's start on the easier side and work our way back, okay?
Fine.
Good. Bass, tell me about Emery Waters.
And I was always so combative with Mr. Todd. Sometimes it was playful. Other times it was more serious. And there was a couple occasions I actually thought they would go at one another. Nobody is really sure what the actual relationship was between those two. Not that it makes any difference or matter. Because they were both,
Go ahead. You stopped. You were saying something. They were both
family.
I've picked up on that from you before, Bass. A keen devotion and caring for those closest to you. More than most other people. They really are like family to you, aren't they?
They are.
Which makes perfect sense to me why you have guilt. Of course, we feel bad when something horrible happens to somebody we know. But we feel that more keenly when it's family. A toxic xenophobic cousin or two notwithstanding.
What happened was my fault.
Why do you say that?
Because it was. I was leading the mission. I was calling the shots.
From what I remember in the classified report.
Yes. Fine. Officially, Wainwright oversaw the expedition, but even the most seasoned soldier isn't going to look at a pencil-pushing officer for orders when this shit hits the fan. It's the sergeant with decades of experience they look towards.
Okay. Let's stick with your analogy. You're right. A soldier must follow orders. Nobody was obliged to follow Wainwright's, though. A soldier isn't supposed to refuse a lawful order. Civilians can. They have the choice without the military consequences. So, you think you're responsible because you gave him the order to stay back to make sure the spiders didn't pursue you?
I didn't give him that order.
Right, right. I apologize. Wainwright was, well, on paper anyway, in charge, and he gave the order, which you didn't fight him on.
No, Wainwright didn't order him to do that either.
Uh-huh. So then Emery made that decision. The decision to remain behind and make sure everybody got out safely on his own. He decided, Bass, not you, not Lawrence Wainwright.
Yeah, but we could have found another way. He should have made out with us.
I'm going to take a wild guess here. But you don't have any experience running particle acceleration equipment from the late 21st century in your bag of tricks, do you?
No.
So then you couldn't be the one remain behind and properly, safely shut everything down?
No.
Okay. Assuming the same applies for Zeke, then do you honestly think that Lawrence Wainwright would have volunteered to stay behind himself? Make a sacrifice for anybody there? Dr. Lorenz may have had the integrity, but she doesn't have the technical knowledge. Truth be told, and the truth you seem to not want to accept, is for the minutes remaining before the station disappeared, the accelerator explosion being a likely potential, if not monitored, with an artificial intelligence, no matter how wonderfully sophisticated it may have been, it was specifically programmed not to operate such a dangerous piece of equipment. And a sadistic, energy-thirsty, and people-killing spider threat still looming. There wasn't any other viable choice. And Emery Waters knew that. Deep down, you know that too, Bass. He didn't do it because he was given an order, because he was told to. He did it because in those few moments with that wonderful, brilliant, complex brain of his, he did the calculations. The only equation that allowed everybody else to make it out safely required his sacrifice. He chose to make the sacrifice himself to save the rest of you, Bass.
I get it, Sydney. I really do. I promise you that, but...
No. No. No buts, Bass. Emery made his own decision, which you shouldn't be... No, you can't be held responsible for. We're all, each and every one of us, responsible for the decisions we make in life, as well as those consequences which result from those decisions. And from where I sit, the consequences of you, Wainwright, and the others surviving made that choice of his a good one, a damned fine one in my book.
Yeah, but there had to be another way.
There were many other ways, but only one in that time and situation which had the desired result. He knew that. Bass, Emery knew unless he acted, The safety of the rest of the team was in danger. Nobody would have been able to do what he had to do. Nobody. He was the logical choice, the only choice. His sacrifice wasn't designed to make people feel guilty. It was for people to go on doing what they needed to do. In essence, he made his choice. A gift, in a way. And you can either be thankful for that, appreciate and respect that choice, that sacrifice, or you can elect to go on feeling grief, remorse, and guilt. But wouldn't that cheapen that gift of his? If you want my professional opinion, the best thing you can do is make the most of the days ahead and honor that gift. That actually makes a lot of sense. I understand what you're saying. I just can't get over feeling bad. There's a razor-thin line between feeling bad and feeling responsible. People feel bad all the time, and that's a very normal thing. Guilt, well, that's the destructive side that seldom has any good ending. Sounds like you understand that difference now.
I guess I'm starting to. And it really does make sense. Not just saying that. It's probably gonna take some time, but I do get it. Thanks, Sid.
Don't thank me until you see the bill. Now, why don't we move on? Let's chat about what took place with Josh Nichols on the mountain.
It's like this block in my memory, and no matter how many times you bring it up, the memories just aren't there.
Those memories are in there, Bass. They're in there. You just can't access them because of probably a head injury. Your playback's been all scrambled. But listen, I assure you, I have recovered a lot harder memories in the past. That being said, look, we have been at this for an hour. Do you want to take a break? It sounds like the winds aren't climbing anymore. We may not be out of the woods, but what we're doing here, it's a big leap. Maybe making all the difference. I'm sure it doesn't mind a small break for a snack or a coffee.
Did you say it?
I know. Sounds like a spooky clown from the King horror novels. I'm struggling with how to refer to it, the ice. Like I said, he, she, they doesn't really apply. It's a placeholder. It's a work in progress.
I'm okay, Sid, really. Let's just keep that progress going, okay? I can eat later.
All right. Your session, their dime. Let's dive back in. Let's step back to just after he hit you with the piece of wood you came to.
I come to, my head is pounding, and Captain Traeger. He's checking up on me, and he's, said that Fred had made contact with the Norwegians, and they were inbound. They were inbound, but Josh had escaped, and he was still out there, running. Even though there was no place to go.
So you went for him, to try to catch him?
Yeah, mostly.
Mostly? What else was it? What more than bring him in?
Yeah, I wanted to bring him in, but I wanted to make sure he accounted for what he did, so justice would be served for the murder of Dr. Rodney.
Some might argue that being left out there would have been justice.
Yeah, well then some are wrong. You don't put anybody in a situation like that, in an environment like that. I don't care what crime they're accused of.
So, you didn't just go out there to catch him. You went out there to rescue him, even after he assaulted you.
Stop trying to make it sound all noble. I was just doing my job. That's it, okay?
Hey, I wasn't there. I don't know. All I have to go on is what you tell me and what your mind says.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep forgetting you can do that. Hear my thoughts. still weirds me out.
Okay, you take off. Your head is throbbing. Leg is in considerable pain. The wind is probably a lot like this. It's freezing cold, I imagine. You're after the kid, and once again, against the clock for the incoming rescue helicopter.
Right, yeah.
Tell me more about those initial moments, leaving the safety and shelter where you knew it was safe and headed out to face the darkness out there, going after a killer on the side of the mountain where one wrong step and you're never found again.
I'm trying, but it's fuzzy. It's like blurry. It's starting to come into focus, but...
Concentrate on the things you do remember.
I remember the cold on my face. It was biting into my face. I felt like I could hear the beating of my heart in rhythm with the pounding of my head. It was dark, yeah. It was real dark. I had taken out flashlight and I was just focused.
Focused on what?
His footprints. I focused on the footprints before the snow erased them. But I focused on
the hunt, the chase.
No, on finding him, getting him back, getting everybody back. Safe. But I was...
Stay with that memory. You're in the snow. It's deep. The cold on your face. Your head is throbbing. You see his prints.
I hear him. Heard him. I heard him. Yeah. I mean, I saw his prints, but I could hear him. That's how I was able to pinpoint where he was. And he was talking. He was talking on the side of the mountain.
What was he saying?
I don't know. The wind is... I could hear his voice, but the words... like hearing someone talk through thin walls.
So, you heard him talking, and you approached him. What next?
I unholstered my firearm, took out my Surefire, my flashlight, and attached it under the barrel. Hit the light, and drew a bead on him.
You spoke to him?
Yeah, it was... You know, nothing profound. Give it up, come back with me. There are no other options.
Okay. Tell me about the surroundings. What did you see with your flashlight?
I'm looking around. He's standing next to this massive boulder. Alone. He's standing there alone next to this boulder on the side of a cliff. I mean, just right on the edge. He was up to his thighs in the snow, but close to that edge. I make one step towards him. I can see the bottom of his coat is flapping up from some winds that are coming straight up that cliff wall.
Winds up the wall. What did Josh do when you told him he was caught? Did he raise his hands and offer to surrender?
No, he didn't do that. He was holding on to something.
A weapon? A concealed weapon?
No, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't a weapon. Definitely not a weapon. It was thin, metallic-like box, but small. Like, not even the size of a deck of cards. Small. No. No, he said something. He said, get it. I didn't get it. That I never did. More is going on. Something about everything is bigger than... God damn it. I'm trying, Sydney.
I believe you. This is phenomenal progress. What then?
I give him some choices. He frees by himself. Come back with me, or I'd shoot him in the leg and drag him back, screaming, or...
You'd put him down, out of his misery, so he wouldn't freeze.
No, I didn't say that. But I can't recall.
Stay with it, Bass. You're doing great. You're on the mountain.
He's looking at me. He's looking right in my eyes. Smiling. No, smirking. He's smirking.
What was that? You just remembered something. What else?
Something's behind him. There's something behind him. I can see it. He keeps subtly looking over his shoulder, down the cliffside. He's watching for something, waiting. He was expecting something.
What else? What else was said?
Damn it. I can't. It's not there.
You followed him out there. Out of the plane wreckage, the cockpit.
No, not the cockpit. It was the tail section.
Right. You followed him, pursued him, followed a trail of blood.
Not the blood. It was footprints. It was footprints. Sydney.
Down the mountain. No, up the mountain, Sydney. You said down before. You said you chased him down.
No, then you heard it wrong. I said up the mountain.
Oh, right. You said up the mountain to hunt him down.
I wasn't hunting him. I wanted to save him.
Needed to for the marshals, for your arrest record, for the case.
No. I needed to because I had to save his life.
The kid already murdered somebody. Hell, he tried to kill you once before. Then he hit you over the head with a piece of wood, again trying to kill you.
He wasn't trying to kill me. He said that. He said that to me. He said he wasn't trying to kill me. He just wanted to escape.
So you follow him down the hill.
Up.
You find him. He has you against the cliff face, trapped.
No, that was him. I had him.
He has a weapon in his hand. He's armed. You're against the cliff.
It's not a weapon. It's not a threat. It's not authorized.
You shot him.
He jumped. He jumped. He leaned back. Slowly fell backwards. Smirking the entire way down. God damn it, Sydney. It's like a floodgate just opened up in my head, and it's coming back. I can remember everything. He fell backwards. He folded his arms and fell backwards. Smirking at me. I approach him slowly, looking over the edge. And there was. It was that same goddamn swirling purple and blue mist. No, it was bigger than that. It wasn't mist. It was a cloud. It was massive, and it just hung there in midair. There was this fierce wind coming up that cliffside, cutting into my face. It's pushing me back. But that cloud is unfazed. It just stayed there. And he fell. I don't know. He fell into it or through it. My head is woozier than ever. I am so cold. I'm freezing. I'm shaking like a leaf. I go to reholster my weapon. And I'm shivering. But I pull the trigger. I pulled the trigger. My hand was frozen. And I pulled the trigger as I tried to reholster. Jesus, rookie mistake. I'm goddamn lucky I didn't put one through my leg. That's where that round went. That was the unaccounted shot. I accidentally You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. You knew this the whole time. You knew I didn't do it. God damn
no.
You, Sydney.
No, I didn't know. But I had a strong suspicion. The things you said, the way you said them, would have been easy just to leave the kid out there. Easier for you than even putting a bullet in him. No authority would have needed to investigate. You were injured, but you wouldn't let him go. You couldn't let him go, despite it all. Dr. Rodney's murder, almost murdering you, hitting you with the wood. You wouldn't let somebody you could help go.
While back there, you said what we're doing here. It's a big leap. It's my session, my dime. Let's jump back in. That was all coincidence. Come on, Sydney.
As I said before, a lot of what happens here needs to be you getting to your own realization. We therapists, we just nudge it in the proper direction.
There's no way. There's no way to know that it would. Like you said, you weren't there.
That's correct. I wasn't there. I didn't witness what really happened. But that doesn't mean nobody didn't see what really happened.
You mean it?
Pronouns aha when it's a non-corporeal entity, isn't it?
The ice. The ice witnessed for me.
Not my place to say. Patient-doctor privilege applies here, too.
What I will say, Bass, is this is one for the textbooks.
This is really something. The progress, the realizations. All of it would make for a wonderful paper. If not for the multiple NDAs I signed. You sure you don't want to take a break now? Maybe have a drink.
Break? No, I don't want to take a break, Sydney. Drink? Hell yes, I want to drink.
Good. I didn't want to have to drink alone. There you go. I would like to propose a toast. Why don't we drink to Chuck Goodwin, your boss, U.S. Marshal, father-in-law? I didn't know the man, but I would very much like you to tell me about him. Here's to Chuck, to Charlie.
Ah, sorry, Sid. I didn't realize the handheld recorder was that low on battery charge. I don't typically use it as much as I did today without charging.
It has been a long day, hasn't it? Not the strangest day for around here, but absolutely a long day. So, we left off with you going through the Marshall School, meeting your wife at the bar, not knowing it was Charlie's daughter, and until you get called in, which led to dating and getting married. I think that's where we left it.
Charlie tolerated me since I married his daughter. I honestly don't think there would have been a person on the planet in his mind that would have been good enough for her. Janet, his wife, on the other hand, she adored me. She was always going out of her way to make me, for the first few years, Charlie assigned me all the shit jobs. He was the chief deputy marshal back then of Georgia's Southern District after leaving Glencoe, and we were living in Savannah. He'd have me on a general inmate transfer, defending old boozy judges and magistrates who were crooked as hell, witness protection of some of the most privileged little shit-stained rich kids that were out there. Anytime there was a job no sane marshal would touch, I got assigned to work.
Sounds like he was overbearing. A bit like my old man.
Charlie? Charlie was an asshole. Back then, he was an asshole. But I wasn't about to let him see my frustration. Any job he gave me, I did it. No bitching or complaining. Don't get me wrong. I wanted to pop him more than a handful of times. But I was never going to give him that satisfaction.
So then, what ultimately changed between the two of you?
I think it was about a year, year and a half of this going on that my wife put her foot down. I can still remember that morning. It was 5 a.m. She was an elementary school teacher back then, first grade. I would normally get up before her, shower, get us coffee ready, and we'd get put together in the bathroom at the same time. This particular morning, she was up first, made me coffee, had her green summer dress on. Looked like she was going to church or to court. So I asked her what was up.
You know, just as an aside, you should really try to smile like that more. It hangs nice on you.
Sydney, do you mind?
I'm sorry. Sorry. You're up. Your wife is up earlier, putting her face on.
So I ask her, baby, why are you all made up? Turns out, she was going to court. To the federal courthouse, where we worked, Charlie and I. Said she'd had enough. She was going to march in there, lay it all out to her daddy, and then come hell or high water, or arrest for disorderly, things were about to change. Strong woman. Brother, if you only knew the half of it. So, I tell her that's the last thing I need. My wife coming to the office in front of all the other deputy marshals to fight my battles. Tried to convince her that it would do more hurt than help my career. Having a woman fight my battles?
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the last thing you wanted to say to her. She capped her lipstick, put on her heels, and was out the front door. I debated calling the TAC team to be on alert for her. Stop her at the door as disgruntled.
Would that have worked?
No. No, she would have massacred them. Once she had a burr in her saddle, there was no getting her to change her mind. Only play I had left. The only thing I could do, really, was call Charlie and tell him what was heading his way. I told him this was it. If he truly didn't want me as a deputy marshal, as his son-in-law, if I was truly the worthless as all the above, simply let her in and let her make a scene in that office. It would ruin my career, make me quit, and I'd just become a mall security guard or something. I can still remember that silence on the other end of the line. Felt like it went on for about a minute. I knew at that point my future was going to be decided, one way or the other. Well, what happened? After about a minute, he just said, "I'll take care of it." 4 years, I thought him making me sweat that moment out was just another way of sticking it to me, making me fry. Turns out, many years later, he tells me he did not pause for effect, that in fact, he was terrified. He, too, thought about calling the TAC team to intercept her. Now, Charlie was. He's a big guy. Big as I was, but four times as tough. And there was only one person on this planet he couldn't stand up to, who would have him apologizing for shit he had never even done. Not the impression you want to advertise in front of a dozen U.S. Marshals under your employ. Only one person. His little girl. My wife. Well, it was at that moment I think we actually had our first bonding experience. Both us marshals, federal agents, we'd face danger and death every single day, battle hardened. And both of us afraid of a 5'1", 110 pounds when she's soaking wet woman whose voice alone would carry over three counties when you got her upset enough. The moment when he stopped seeing you as the guy who married his daughter, but now as his son-in-law. Can I get another round over here? Sure. To our fathers, by birth or by marriage.
And the sons, by birth or marriage.
Cheers.
L'chaim. So what finally happened?
With what?
Your wife coming in hot, locked and loaded to see her dad.
Oh. Well, since the TAC team was actually across town dealing with a gang conflict situation between the Jamaicans and Colombians, he pretty much did what I've done in the place.
Sit it down and talk it out.
No, no, Sydney. Have you not been listening over there? You didn't talk it out with her unless you were prepared and braced to be yelled at for 20 minutes and have everything you've done in the past 5 years that she didn't like invoked. No, he pulled the fire alarm so the building would have to be evacuated. Are you serious? I'm dead serious. She was worse than the Terminator, man. Every male in that place would have been a target. So, building gets evacuated. Fire department comes in, they have to inspect and clear. Everything is okay for the building to be reopened, so he buys some time. Charlie found her just as she was pulling in. He hopped in her car. From what he told me, he got it worse than ever before. You know, at least when you're in a bedroom or a living room, you can move around, dodge and weave, if you will. Charlie was stuck in her passenger side seat. 45 minutes until he promised her, swore to her, that he'd start treating me better and also send her and her mom to a spa that week. After that, he found more respect for me. I stopped getting all the shit assignments. Don't get me wrong, you don't stop acting like a horse's ass overnight. It'd only be occasionally. Until...
You know what? We'll chat about that later. Let's stick with Chuck for now.
After she passed, they passed. Well, that's when all the guilt started. After her funeral, the morning, the guilt sets in. It was a dark place for me, Sydney. As dark as they come. Charlie, for a while, I
I felt he blamed me, held me responsible, both him and Janet.
But he didn't. He had his own guilt to deal with about your loss.
Yep.
Yet again, she provided a bonding moment for us, even after her death.
Months went by, years. Charlie would get reassigned one district to another. He'd always have me transfer with him. After the second time, I thought he was just trying to babysit me. After a while, and asking him about it, he said no. He was one of the best deputy marshals he ever saw. Go-to guy. And being his son-in-law had nothing to do with it. That had quarterbacked more than a few high-profile assignments for him. I got the job done. Always got the job done. Years become a decade. Almost two. And I contemplated leaving the Marshal Service, honestly. It was the next day after my mind was made up that Charlie called me in his office. Said he was sending me down here for a murder investigation.
I see. You couldn't just tell him to find somebody else?
No. I didn't. Charlie needed somebody he trusted for this. I couldn't let him down.
So once again, Deputy Marshal Marlowe puts everybody first, except for his own plan.
I wish I had told him to get somebody else, that I had gone on with my plans, because he'd still be alive.
How do you figure that?
What's this Project Atlas? It's how I got Charlie and Janet murdered. I have no idea what Atlas really is. All I know is it's some super secret project that Wainwright and some of the others are working on for whatever evil world-changing plans Beauregard Loewing have in mind. I found out about it, and even the mere mention of the name was enough to set the wheels in motion.
So they were killed because you found out a project's codename?
They were killed for something I can't even explain what it is. I had a card to play. I was told, I was warned not to play it or bad things would happen. I played it, bad things happened. Charlie and Janet were killed over it.
I am hearing a lot of assumptions that pass. Even if your pal at the FBI found a device used by Middle East intelligence, there isn't definitive proof it was connected to you.
Oh, come on, Sydney!
Bass, why did you join the Marshals? Why did your father-in-law? Hell, why does any person join the Marshals?
To do good, mostly to do good, to help people.
To make a difference.
Sure.
Did you take an oath?
All Marshals do.
I've been curious. Would you mind? Could I hear that oath now?
Are you serious?
Yes. Please, humor me.
I, Bass Wyatt Marlowe, do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me, God.
Thank you for that. This is at the heart and the core of what it is that you do, isn't it? Defend the U.S., its people, civilians, its interests, against anybody that threatens any of that. You swear an oath to defend. You believe that?
All Marshals do, yes.
Did Chuck?
No. No, Sidney, not this time. I see what you're doing. Very smart. I will give you that. Yes, of course, Charlie believed that, more than most. But there is nothing in the oath that says it's okay to get killed by your donkey-brained son-in-law.
Death is all around you. You see it as part of your work. It can be a result of what you're charged to do, the protecting of lives and people. I may not have known Chuck, but I know you, Bass Marlowe. You put your life on the line for that oath to protect. You learned it in training.
Enough.
In Glencoe.
Stop.
The instructors, the teachers, the leaders who taught you how to be a marshal, they made sure those weren't just words to read and get a badge as a prize. That you believed it, you understood what it really meant, and the price that you may be asked to pay for that oath. Who was the head instructor, Bass?
I said stop!
He died for something he believed in. A cause that most people aren't brave enough to do. I won't serve you horseshit, Bass Marlowe, and tell you it's hamburger. I don't know if his death was or wasn't a result of this Project Atlas. And since I'm not hearing the wind outside getting stronger, I'd say you realize that now too. Look, before we move on, I'm going to ask you for a favor. For Charlie, for your wife, for Janet, for yourself. Whoever did that to them, whoever is the face behind the name you're thinking, this Jocelyn, for what you have in mind to avenge Charlie, you just make sure it's what he would have wanted, that you have the right person. If she's coming for you, that's one thing. Just make sure you don't take any actions you can't ever take back. Yes, exactly. Leaving the Marshal Service wasn't the answer 15 years ago. It wasn't the answer last year before coming down to Honest and Scott. This is where we've been leading to all along, isn't it, Bass? Back to the start, all that darkness you kept, that you've been carrying all this time, inflicting on yourself.
Sorry about your glasses.
So am I. Those were a matching set. I noticed in all the times you have spoken of being married, the engagement, the time together, sharing memories of your wife, you've never once said her name. Can you say it now? I think that's the first step. Admitting what the situation is, has been. Both then, as well as in here and now, the burden you've carried for all that time. What is your wife's name, Bass?
Her name is... was Diane. Even though Charlie really started to accept me. He didn't want me to rest on the fact that I was the chief deputy marshal's son-in-law. Didn't want to perceive I was riding coat strings. He despised nepotism. Wanted to make sure everybody saw that I wasn't being treated any better than any other DMs.
He was looking out for you. Go on.
Well, I was part of this small task force. 5 deputy marshals who were sent out to look for this guy who was wanted and failed to appear in federal court. Real shitbag. Desmond Abbott. He had escaped a maximum security detention center in Puerto Rico back in the early 90s. Smuggled M16s, ARs, various firearms in and out of the U.S. Well, Charlie got reliable intel. He was either in Brunswick, Georgia area visiting an old army buddy or was shortly about to arrive. So we stake out the trail of the shipbird's buddy he had and waited and waited and waited. Then we waited some more. I have no clue who this moron pissed off in D.C. or in the Marshal Service, but he managed to get himself a spot in the top 15.
What's the top 15?
Top 15 most wanted. Every department has their own most wanted. He was on ours. Still is, last time I checked. But the fact that he landed on this list made him top priority for the brass in D.C., so...
You wait.
We waited. 6 weeks, Sid. 6 long, hot, smelly weeks of being in a cargo van with 4 other dudes, half of whom had not discovered the miracle invention of body deodorant, the other half who thought Dracar Noir was for bathing him. Anyway, the guy's a no-show. We had multiple units watching the trailer and tailing Shitberg's buddy 24-7. We had the house bugged, the phone lines bugged. Charlie's intel must have been wonky because Abbott never showed and there was never any mention of him by his buddy. It was that last night. One of the guys gets the official call from D.C. to call off the stakeout. It was over. You never saw 2 shifts of 5 guys more happy not to have to sit there anymore and play Name That 80s Show. We all drive back to his van to get showered up and head home. I got a message on my desk from my wife. From Diane. She'd heard about the stakeout being canceled. And she was happy that I had a few days off, but she had some news. News that couldn't wait any longer. She made reservations at this place in downtown Savannah on the West River. It was a rooftop joint. Myrtle something rooftop garden, I think. It was her favorite restaurant in all of Georgia. So I get cleaned up and I head over there. It was only 10 blocks away from Tomochichi Federal Building, so we met up at 7 that evening.
And what was the big news?
She'd been feeling off the past few months, so she went to go see her doctor and discovered she was around
8 to 9 months pregnant.
Oh.
That was several days before. She wanted to tell me, but didn't want to distract me from the job I was doing. At the same time, she saw how I'd come home after 18 hours on, get a handful of hours of sleep, and then head right back in. She didn't want to let the news go untold for too much longer, though, so when she heard the stakeout had been dropped, she chose that night.
Had you two been trying for a baby?
I mean, it wasn't something we actively planned. We'd only been married at that point for a couple of years. I mean, we both wanted kids, a family and all that, but it wasn't something we had decided was to happen then and there. That said, she was so excited. I remember, I think I was in mild shock at the news. I wasn't mad or angry or disappointed. It was more half exhaustion, half realization that that I was going to be a dad. So once I realized this was great news, we celebrated. She obviously couldn't have any booze, and after being up for 19 hours, well, I really wanted a bourbon, but I settled for a celebratory cigar that the guy at the next table offered me when he heard we were expecting. You know, we didn't know any of the other patrons that evening, but as soon as the news got around, and it got around fast, all the ladies, no matter how young or old, swarmed that table to give her advice or get her ready for the baby. Promises of keeping in touch and attending baby showers. All the guys come over and give me a hard time, joking about being a new dad and to not count on much sleep or getting well. I'll get anything else for the next 6 months after baby was born. Our quiet little dinner together turned into an impromptu roof garden celebration. Everybody just mixed around that night. And the owner, who was there, he took care of our entire bill. Nice guy. You know, up until Kendra, that was the last memory I had of happiness and contentment. Probably close to 20 years now.
What happened, Bass? What happened that evening?
It was 2 a.m. We closed the place down along with everybody else. Neither of us had anything to drink that night, so we were okay heading back home. At that point, though, I'd been up for 26 hours. Beginning up early the last day of the stay, got to take a shift for a marshal who was ill. Spending the evening on that rooftop. It had been over a full day since I got any rest. I remember chatting with Diane on the way back home. She'd tell me to stop crossing the line at least twice. After the third time, she asked me to pull over, that she'd drive the rest of the way. But no. Nope. I had to be stubborn. I had to be the husband, the man, the new father, and show her I was responsible. I remember driving in silence for several minutes. She was mad. Really mad at me. It was so quiet in that truck. I remember her yelling, though. The lights in the windshield were so goddamn bright. Then I came to on a gurney. I was told I was at the Memorial Health on the other side of town. There were doctors and nurses working all around me, trying to save me. I fall back unconscious, and the next thing I remember is my mom, Fiona, Charlie, and Janet being in a hospital room with me. They told me that Diane or the baby had made it.
I'm so sorry, Bass.
Yeah, well, don't be. Because you're not the one who killed your wife and unborn baby.
Bass, it wasn't your fault. It was an accident.
Oh.
An accident, yeah. I accidentally stayed out too late. I accidentally decided to be so chauvinistic not to let a lady drive. I accidentally didn't know when I had no place driving a vehicle. Charlie, yeah, I remember Charlie telling me the same thing, you know, there? In the hospital, when it was just him and me. Honestly tried to tell me that he was more to blame than me. Diane, I told him and Janet about the baby a few days before. Chuck wanted to pull me out of the stakeout early, but he said he got too worried about that impression we'd give to the others. He was more concerned with his reputation than... and family. Charlie felt guilty too.
Neither of you were to blame, Bass. For all the crime and darkness you face each day on the job, this was happiness. This was a celebration of life, a new life. In all that darkness you faced, the light was the focus on everything. To you, Diane, Charlie, and Janet, your mom would be new grandparents. Is that why you tore apart your office when you heard the news about Chuck? About his own car accident?
It was assault and wound. A way for the killer to remind me of my past and the guilt. Yeah, it was why the news hit me as hard as it did. Why, you know what, just, yeah. Anyway, the night they brought us in, I was fully examined. Blood alcohol and tox screens all came back 100% negative. Not a drop of alcohol or any drug use was found in my or Diane's systems. It was investigated by the DOJ's AG's office. They formally stepped in and took over the investigation. They ultimately ruled it an accident. 8 weeks family leave, I was back on the job.
And what was that like?
At first?
Yeah.
Numb. I was numb. I was aware of things when they were going around me. You know, I could hear words people were saying. But it was like, it was like just being on autopilot. I didn't feel anything. Didn't feel sadness, regret. I didn't feel hungry or sleepy for the first few months. Now, you know what? That's not true. There was only one feeling present the entire time. And that was guilt. After the funeral, after time off, and after about 6 months back, I was having issues dealing. And I decided the best way to cope was to write her letters and notes. Reminders at first. Later it became more formal. I'd dictate all my data or my work that involved to formal reports dedicated to her. It was a way that I didn't have to deal with her passing, the baby's passing. She was still real to me. Chuck found out, discovered what I was doing by pure coincidence. And the guilt he had himself was obvious to me that now it led him to cover for me for 15 fucking years. That's why Chuck had me transferred around with him. To look after me. Protect me. That must have been his way to atone for the pain he caused his daughter in all those early years.
I think it was more than just his penance, Bass. I think it was also that he loved you like his own son.
Whenever I made reports, requests, or needed something, Chuck would intercept and make sure I got whatever was needed to help me cope, I guess. I'm sure a few others he trusted were aware. How could they not be? Looking out. Fiona was obviously one of them.
There's more here, Bass. More you're not mentioning.
One week before coming down to Antarctica, just after being told about the assignment, I had more or less a decision about my future. kind of spell it out for you, Sydney. You can obviously hear it. But I was ready not to have a future any longer. I just wanted to end it.
I had it all planned out, too.
Next day, I'd fly back to Atlanta, and I would do it at the exact spot where they lost their lives. Well, that night I had the weirdest goddamn dream about the pole, about the station, about
the ice. That was it, wasn't it? It was him. You know what? Sorry, I'm just going to use her from now on when I refer to it. That was her summoning you. Sometimes I kind of feel like maybe it's us that first calls out to her. Our guilt, our need, our struggles, our pain. Look, I'm obviously no philosopher or astrophysicist, but in all the interviews I've done down here, every winter I'm at this place, I have yet to meet somebody who doesn't benefit from being here. How she helped them deal with whatever they had going on. Sometimes they say they heard a call or felt a pull. I kind of feel that sometimes. We're the ones who make the call to the ice, subconsciously or otherwise. Sometimes it's proactive, sometimes it's more primal, more reactive. Bassett wasn't Charlie's fault, no more than it was your fault. Look, I know you don't believe in higher powers, God, Buddha, Allah, call it whatever you want. It's not what you follow. I don't know if Diana, your baby's passing, was preordained, if it was random or part of some grandiose design. Again, not a philosopher, but loving somebody new, making the most of the life you have now, are all wonderful things. You have already spent almost 20 years of it, a good portion of your life making yourself suffer, living in a self-imposed purgatory. That isn't what Diane would have wanted for you. And deep down, you know that. It's time, Bass. It's time to forgive yourself. I can't. I'm to blame.
All staff, evacuate immediately to the B1 lifeboat. This is not a drill. All staff, evacuate to the B1 lifeboat.
You gotta get that lifeboat set. It's over. Go. I'm gonna stay here.
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to stay here too, with you. Have one more round. You want the bottle?
You know, your glass broke. I'm not kidding here, Sydney. Go. Don't make me responsible for it. Another loss.
And if I go, Bass, I'm going to feel responsible for yours. See, it's a vicious cycle, guilt. Look. It's time, Bass. You have to let it go. You have to end this cycle. The suffering you've been through, it's done nothing but led you to the darkest of places any individual can go. What happened to your wife, baby, was an accident. What you were thinking of doing then, what you're still thinking of now, it's suicide. Another word for it is murder. That guilt you feel now, everybody that you love now around you will have the same level of guilt after you do it. Can you deal with that? Kendra, Thomas, Zeke, your new family, as you put it before, they'll have to suffer now. They'll inherit the guilt that's driving you to this decision. Bass, make your legacy something Chuck and Diane would be proud of. Life, Bass. Your legacy needs to be life, not a legacy of pain and guilt and death. It's time, Bass. end this cycle of suffering here and now. It's time to accept life. I can hear you actually do mean it. You just need to say it.
I forget myself. I choose life.
Recording stopped. Recording started.
All my new polies. My name is Miss Sherilyn Junior, and I'm the station's main information manager. Y'all just think of me like your own personal fairy godmother. Once y'all get settled and get your stuff stowed away in your berth, come join us in the B3 lounge for your orientation. Oh, you are just going to have such a great time here on the ice. Orientation starts at 11:30 hours. Afterwards, we can discuss theories about the next season of Bridgerton. Thank you.
Bass.
Morning, Sid.
You here to see me off?
Yeah. I couldn't let you leave without one more goodbye.
I don't believe in goodbyes, Bass. I believe in until we catch up, which will be
10 a.m. New York time every first Tuesday of the month for an hour. I'll keep our appointment, Sid, I promise.
I've never known you to be anything other than a man of your word. You don't have to say anything out loud, Bass. I still have this gift until I leave the ice. You're very welcome, and I was happy to get you into a better place.
I just regret I charged by the hour. I'd never make money off of you.
Yeah, well, it's your problem.
You take care, Bass Marlowe, of yourself, of Kendra, and of this place for me until I get back next season.
A handshake. Come on, Sydney. You're family now. And families do not do handshakes. Safe travel, Sydney.
Bass, parting words of advice, if you don't mind.
I am all ears, Sydney.
Mikhail, no matter what, don't trust him. Ever.
Recording stopped.
Hi, Diane. It's me. Things are better. It's been about a month since the storms ended. Since that night. I radioed Marshall Murphy the following day. Told her I needed to take a few weeks off. Giving nothing can take place on this drug smuggling surveillance until now anyway, she was inclined to approve the leave. She said, after looking at my personal files, I may hold the record for unused leave compiled by a single deputy marshal. She was more than happy to let me have the time off. I've spent this last month starting the process of getting better, focusing on myself more than the job. Zeke, oh, you'd love him so much. All Zeke has been focused on is his station's repairs. I haven't seen him this happy since the new Snowcats arrived last season. That said, he still found the time to properly introduce me to his lady, the station. Her name is Lucille. It's a whole Zeke thing. Mr. Todd is talking about staying on the ice. Despite losing his friend, Emery, this last event woke something within him. Showed him his value as a person wasn't based on a relationship. That he himself had self-worth. He just needed to find it. Fred Ferguson, for as much as he's been talking about leaving to see his Bruins, he found something here worth staying for. Dr. Temps. It is the oddest combination anybody would have guessed. But I think it was Cupid's arrow that hit her. He actually wants to stay now, despite the fact he won't be fire crew chief. Dr. Wainwright. Well, the replacement parts for the electrical components arrive tomorrow, And I'm sure he'll set priorities to get their secret Atlas project back on track. Thomas said there's been a lot of background noise between Bolo and Larry since the project shut down. And apparently they aren't happy with him taking some sort of steps to safeguard the project going forward. Things between Kendra and I aren't going well. It took a lot for me to tell her about us and how I've been dealing with you and the baby's passing for a very long time. She's been very supportive. She makes me... No, she is a large part of my happiness. And I'm really starting to find real happiness again, Daya. Not all at once, but Sydney said it's opening myself up to the possibility that is making all the difference. And I also informed him that if he ever told anybody I cried, we'd have words. And we shared a laugh about that. In our last session on the station, I remembered something very personal. Something you'd left me after you had died. When I was finally able to put your stuff away, I remember your nightstand table book, and it was left open to a poem by Robert Frost. I remember at first I thought I should take that as an invitation to join you. It wasn't until talking to Sydney I realized it was better to consider it a plea from you to me to not enter those woods, no matter how inviting it might sound at the time. It's like this place, where the snowy evening lasts for half a year, but is now ended. And it's time for the station, and I, to leave the dark winter and take our places in the light. Anyway, I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep.
Oh, there you are, Deputy. Thomas asked me to tell you there is a new Poli who went out running this morning, twisted their ankle and radio, and they need help getting back to the station. We have Snowmobile 8 gassed and ready for you. They're a mile past the dark sector.
Oh, thanks, son. Tell Ambrose and Timms I'll be bringing in one stray and meet me at Destination Alpha. 10 minutes.
Yes, Marshal.
It's October 5th, 2022. Summer season. Day one. Time to get back to work. Time to live again. This is Supervisory Deputy Marshal Bass Marlowe. The Ice Sheriff. Back on active assignment. Daylight's burning, Diane. This land needs to be tamed. This is my new assignment. This is where I belong.
This has been Season 2 of 90 Degrees South. On behalf of the cast and crew, I'd like to thank you for listening. If you liked the episode and are enjoying the series, please remember to give us a like, a share, a tweet, send a raven, or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast site. It helps us to get the word out and keeps the cold at bay. You can also help support us on Patreon. Just search for 90 Degrees South Podcast and you'll find our page with various tiers of support. Every little bit helps to provide for more adventures and stories. Now, for the cast credits. Our players were Heather Johnson as Dr. Kendra Jennings, Dr. Gemma Lawrence, Dr. Catherine Timms, Lunch Lady Alice, and Special Agent Jocelyn Fowler, and U.S. Marshal Ann Murphy. Owen Virgin as Thomas Kelly, Franklin the Demon, and Fire Chief Landry Thibodeau. Kyle Brown as Firefighter Fred and Emery Waters. Ben Kramer as Captain Traeger, Patrick Dauber, and Special Deputy Marshal Bill Culligan. Dara Light as Director Madeline Dantes. Aaron McCann as Agent Fiona Anderson. Juno as Station Event Coordinator Nick Webster. Marnie Werner as alt-right Sandra Duracha. Barbara Bradley as Cheryl Lynn June. And Trent Shumway as Deputy U.S. Marshal Bass Marlowe, Dr. Lawrence Wainwright, Chaz Wilford, Chief Ezekiel Bustamante, Dr. Carl Jovac, Dr. Julian Ambrose, Custodian Mikhail.
Janitor.
IT Manager Chris Todd, Reno Dave Brewster, Deacon McTaggart, Chief Meteorologist Topper Hunt, Josh Nichols, Dr. Mark Rodney, Chaz Wilford, and Dr. Sidney Bremer. This concludes Season 2. Until next time.
Recording has commenced.
Oh, yeah. That won't wear on me. You! Paul Bunyan-looking lad!
May I help you, ma'am?
I seriously doubt it. Where is Destination Alpha?
Right over there.
Boy, mouth breather. My eyes are up here.
Sorry, ma'am. That...
Welcome to a Mutz and Scott. So many new people this summer season. Oh, you can put your coat in there. One of the DeWalts will get your stuff. I don't see a name tag on you. May I ask your name?
Pleasure first, me old son, before work. Tell me, where can I find Deputy Marshmallow?
This has been a BMB production.